Thank you for joining us on our journey here to preserve the history of mixed martial arts. When I wanted to take on this project, I needed help. I brought in one of my favorite matchmakers, Miguel Iturralde, and the MMA detective, Mike Davis. So to do this, we've been able to preserve history. Welcome and enjoy. Welcome back, fans. Thank you so much for paying attention again. Another great interview we have coming up. Deep dive, Gerald Harris. Now, this guy is somebody who I fought on the same card of him once, maybe twice. I think it was once, but I just remember because he stole one of my bonuses, I believe. Well, he made me change the way I did things because beautiful slam he had. I knew he was winning knockout of the night, but very interesting guy. I think he's ran for some form of government. He's been a comedian. He's done a lot in his life. So I can't wait to really dive deep in what he's been doing the whole time.
So what we're dealing here with Chris is a very, very well-spoken guy. And like, he's intelligent. He's a school teacher, a gym coach, a female wrestling coach, big time family comedian. Stand-up comedian. Like, we're talking with a guy that doesn't have a lot of time. And his independent grind was in the Oklahoma area, which was kind of like the Wild West. Like, it was a little bit bonkers. So we're going to concentrate on his independent grind and, you know, push through and see where it comes.
Yep. I agree with you, Mike. I think Oklahoma, like a tumbleweed, it's going to be interesting stuff. And how he came to the sport should be very interesting stuff. What I want to get to, hopefully we do, because I'm confident there's a story there, is you're talking about a guy who went 3-1 and got cut from the UFC. And wow. It's unusual to have like a winning record of, you know, bonuses, slams, and have, you know, a lot of boxes and be gone so quick and not get back there. And I wonder what went on there. So hopefully you can get us there, Mike. That's what I need.
Yeah, right. And, you know, everybody at home, guys, our growth is growing exponentially. And we can't explain to you, like, how much, not only do we appreciate it, but we can't do this unless we know people are watching it. And greatly, greatly appreciate it. Please like, share, subscribe. Leave a review. We do not care what you say on the iTunes reviews. All we ask is that you leave 5 stars. Just put 5 stars, say anything you want. So,
without further ado, Gerald Harris.
That man.
Okay, deep dive time, everybody. Very happy about this guest. This guy is extremely interesting on many levels. You're going to see. Not only did he change the way I fought once because I knew he got the knockout bonus halfway through, you know, his fighting. Well, knockout bonus is out of realm. I got to go for a different bonus. But this dude has done a lot of different things. As we're going to talk about him, stand-up comedy. I've dipped my toe in that, but this dude does a lot more than me. He's just a all-around great guy and a great fighter. Gerald Harris. Gerald, how you doing, brother?
I'm good. No lie, Chris. I did not know you had any idea who I was. So it's an honor to be on this podcast and be interviewed by you guys. So I'm just kind of relaxing at the house after training.
Cool. I'm sure we've already talked a little bit. We got Miguel over here above you, Mike over here to your left, the MMA detective right there. So we're going to go through and we're going to dissect your career like a crazy ex-girlfriend stalker. let's get into it.
You know, he's got, we got Gerald Harris. He's kind of maybe got that, you know, kind of generic name. He thinks Chris doesn't know him. If anybody out there doesn't know this guy, buckle down, because this guy, you know, we could probably fill a podcast talking things that aren't fight talk with this guy. This guy is, yeah. He's done it all. And I'm going to let Mike get us started here, but I'm looking forward to it. He's the second Gerald Harris to fight in the UFC. There's a Jerry Harris who fought back at UFC 7.
Yeah, and, one love.
Yeah. No, that was Art Jimerson, I think. But he wore he was a big dude, and he wore a T-shirt back in those days. So the Gerald Harris we got, he's the real deal. Mike?
Hold on, wait. Before we get going with Mike, I want to ask, I mean, Gerald, you know, I know your background. Can you tell us, like, what sports you did before? What led you to MMA? How to get started before you even had a fight?
Oh, I sucked at everything. I was blind as a bat. I just got surgery last year, but up until then, my glasses were like fish tanks, man. So I tried to play football. I could be a good running back, but I couldn't see in front of me like 5 feet. So no basketball. I couldn't see the goal. So they took me to wrestle, and I was like, they're right here. So I couldn't see the score, but I wrestled ever since the third grade. That's the only sport I ever played, and that's pretty much what led me to mixed martial arts.
So how did you do in wrestling? Did you excel? Did you do well?
I did really well. I was just kind of – I don't know how to explain it. It was crazy. I was a state runner-up in elementary, middle school, high school. But in high school, I lost to the number one wrestler in the entire country, Shane Roller. He was actually a UFC fighter, too. So my senior year, I get the number one wrestler in the United States of America. So, yeah, that was my career. Then I went to college. I was ranked top four when I went to the NCAA tournament, and I unfortunately didn't have a great tournament. But I was always a good wrestler. I placed top 12 at the U.S. Nationals Olympic Trials. Like, I was always really good. You know, if I put more time into it, I would have, you know, probably gotten a lot further. But it just, you couldn't make a living off wrestling back then. It was
really, no.
Not at all. Okay. That was like 2003.
Now, yeah, there are a couple guys. I'm sorry. There are a couple guys, like wrestlers, that do the wrestling just pure competition. Like Gray Maynard said, he didn't have a lot of street fights in his background, but, you know, he's got all the pedigree you want. And then you get guys like Mark Coleman, who love the street fights. What did you have a bunch of street fights did you steer the other way?
That's a funny thing. All right, get out of here, man. Daddy time. All right. That's a baby. It was crazy, man. I mean, when I was like little, we would fight, but nothing serious. I never threw a punch after the sixth grade. I didn't even throw a punch in that fight. When I was in the sixth grade, I went to three different middle schools, and I would get picked on a lot, you know, for changing schools. And I'll never forget, this guy was making fun of my shoes, and I said something back, and I was funny. So everybody's like, yo, you just got roasted by the new dude. And I was killing him, bro. I was like, just hitting him with jokes. So he was like, I see you after school. You know, the old school, see you at the bell. So I'm walking home. I do not want to fight this guy. This guy was like the running back on the football team. He jumps on my back, and I literally turn around and suplex him, like in the air. He jumps on my back like this, and I turn around and lock, and boom, and everybody's like, oh! Like, it just got worse. So I had Pro Wings. I never had name brand shoes. I used to have XJ900s, Pro Wings, Rydells. All my shoes were non-name brand, man. I would get picked on a lot, but I was so damn funny. I've never in my life lost a roasting battle. Like, nobody can out-talk me. Yeah,
that's good.
All right, I'm sorry. I got ADHD. So to answer your question, no, I have not. No street fights in college, none in high school, and just one in middle school, and I never threw a punch. So, no, I didn't punch anybody.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see that. Well, how about we talk about your first fight? The first one on record I see is August 11, 2006, Full Contact Fighting Promotion. For a first fight, the Coca-Cola Event Center can be a little intimidating. When you walked in there, did you have an idea of how important fighting would become in your life?
Sports, wrestling kind of, well, not just wrestling, but if you're a college athlete, you kind of prepare for the big show. I mean, I wrestled my true freshman year. I was at the NCAA tournament with Brock Lesnar. So, ooh. I mean, Brock Lesnar versus Stephen Neal in the finals, legendary, 1999 Penn State University. I mean, I've been on the big stage multiple times. And even with comedy, I opened up for Common, I opened up for big names. So I was okay with the big, it didn't bother me at all. It's kind of tunnel vision, but I did not want to fight. You know, I just wanted to take one fight. I was going to make $600 and call it a day. But when I took that fight, I was going to make the $600. My friend convinced me to take another fight, which was $800. And I'm like, I'll make this money back to back. But that was a tournament. So I took that fight, and they was like, he can't wrestle. It was kind of, you know how it was back then. It was like, the guy could either box or he could wrestle. I was like, all right, I'll just take him down. And, you know, the rest is history. You know, after that fight, my career took off.
So where were you training at before that? Had you had any training before?
Nowhere. The club? I don't know. I didn't do anything. I just worked out. I was a wrestling coach at the school. I had no camp. There was a gym called Mikey Burnett. I used to go to Mikey's gym. I would go there and wrestle guys. But I was not training. I would not call that training. I call it staying in shape, beach muscles. But I did not train until I went to Team Quest. That was the first time I ever trained, but we'll talk about that later. But no, there was no training for me. I just stayed in shape. That's all I did.
So first fight, somebody offers you a fight and you're not training at all, and you go and say, okay, you don't spar at all or nothing. You just went there and fought.
Well, I was at the gym. My car broke down. I was a para. I had a $34,000 a year job before I moved back to Oklahoma, and they didn't accept my certification. So I started making $7 an hour. My car broke down. I'm like, this dude at the gym had a car for $600. And I'm like, yo, I'll do roofing. I'll cook. I'll clean. Whatever I got to do. He's like, nah, man, you can go fight for $600. And I'm like, fight? I'm like, hell no. I'm like, $600, that sounds kind of good. He was like, just take him down. I was like, all right. So I kind of got talked into fighting, but I did not want to make a career out of it. They just kept offering me more money.
Yeah.
Okay. So you beat Ryan Ford by second round knockout. And were there any slams in that fight? Because that's kind of.
Yeah, like signature. A whole bunch. That's when I'll tell you this, and I'm glad you asked. I never said this before. That's when I got discovered. I didn't know how to punch. I didn't know how to kick. So all I knew was I was going to shoot and I was going to take him down. But here I'm like, this ain't college wrestling. I can dump you like we in the hood. You know what I'm saying? As soon as he punched anything, I shot in super quick and I picked him up. I mean, over the cage and just came down with all my might, kind of WWE style. And the crowd was going nuts. I mean, they were just like, oh my God. Like, they never really seen nobody pick people up like that. And I just kept doing it. I mean, it was just wham, wham. And then finally, I would not hit him. I'd slam him. I didn't know what guard was. I didn't know none of that. And my coach is like, hit him. I'm like, no.
Why do you not want to hit him? I mean, you think it'd be a lot easier to hit him once.
I just felt like if I threw a punch, something bad was going to happen. I didn't know. I didn't know I'd break my hand.
You just worried about getting arrested.
Yeah, so let me tell you what made me hit him. We got back on our feet, and he kicked me in my leg. I mean, hard. He kicked me in my inner thigh. And, Chris, you know that hurts.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, oh, hell no. So I shot in. I picked him up. I threw him down. I threw one punch, man, and he just went, like, he went woozy. He started tapping, and I hit him again. I was kind of he wasn't protecting himself. He was tapping. So I got another one.
Hey, this is for that leg kick, you son of a. Yeah.
Yeah, that was that leg kick was like a dodgeball to the face. Like that pissed me off, man.
was that your first leg kick? Did you have any action?
Hell yeah, I never got kicked in my leg. I'm like, who kicks people in the leg? Like,
he never sparred, Miguel.
Like, bro, who does that? Like, that it felt petty to me. I'm like, who kicks legs? You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, you were trying to win this contest peacefully, you know? Like, we were trying to work this out.
Yeah, I'm supposed to take you down and lay on you till they...
He's slamming him. That's not peaceful, Mike.
He was beating him with the cage floor. That's what he was doing.
I don't know how this guy got the video, but there is actually, on my highlight video, Jay, who may have had it, you have to look. I had on Walmart shorts. And I'll never forget it. Right before my fight, I went to Walmart, and I bought some shorts, and you can tell Walmart shorts because they had a little logo on them. I forgot what they're called.
The C on there, Champions or something.
Yeah, like Champion. Bro, I've never been on the internet forums other than wrestling. I go to the MMA forums. They're like, man, the fights were good, but dudes had on Walmart shorts. I was like, hey, yo, you're like, I got roasted. I wasn't used to that, huh?
Yeah, you better come back. Hey, man, usually you're the guy I look forward to bet against. I'm always looking for stuff like that. The guy got the cutoff jeans or something, or the shorts like that. I'm like, this guy ain't going to win, I promise. That's what I always tell
people. You got on some cutoffs.
You'd have cost me some money. You'd have cost me some money, yeah.
Yeah, I would have. I did.
So you beat Ryan Lopez, second round KO, and like that's August 11th. On August 19th, you take your second fight.
Yep.
For the freestyle cage fighting. I'm assuming it's kind of the same promoter at Kane's Ballroom. You fought Chester Launcher.
They offer me a little bit more
money. Why such a quick turnaround for somebody that doesn't fight?
I'll take your money.
He can buy another car.
Yeah, it was $800. I took that $800, and the tournament just got better and better. So
This is the tournament you're in now?
It's a tournament. I didn't know that. I got in, and they're like, oh, it's a tournament. So I get there, and there's two, four, there's 16 people weighing in, I believe. Or is it an eight-man tournament? It's an eight-man tournament. So I had three fights to win.
Man.
The thing was, you got $2,000 to win the tournament. So,
oh,
I mean, that was big back. That was big money back then.
Heck yeah.
It was 4-4, 5-5, and 1-1. And yeah, it was great. So the money.
So was that was over multiple events, or was that the same night?
Oh, no, hell no. It wasn't the same night. Let me tell you what was tough about that fight, Chris, as well. You know this. We had to weigh in the same day. That sucks.
Oh, yes.
I weighed in at like 4 and I fought at like 8. So, I mean, I was used to it from wrestling, but
that's what I was about to say. Yeah.
Yeah, but it was just fighting is a different grind, you know, punching and kicking. And wrestling to me is one dimensional. It's tough, but I mean, it was just to do fighting. I mean, this dude was throwing punches, he was throwing knees. So it was tough. But yeah, I did it. That was the only fight I ever had to weigh in same day. That sucked.
Yeah.
So another second round KO out of Chester Launcher.
Chester Launcher was the second person to ever take me down. No, he was the first person ever. The second person ever was like 10 years later.
He
actually didn't take me down. He threw me, and he wouldn't have scored. He launched me on my forehead, bro. Double overs, douche. Like, I was
really?
Like, oh. Yeah, but he gassed, and I beat him in the face. So.
So were you allowed to knee to the face on the ground there? Was that the rules?
No.
Back then it was like, you know, you showed up at the venue and you kind of found out the rules. They could differ from place to place sometime. You know what I mean? So
it was, I got lucky because I had watched Pride and I seen people get kicked in the face. I'm like, yo, they got that rule. I'm not doing it because all I had was ground game. But no, the rules were cool. There was no crazy stuff on the ground.
Yeah, all right, so you're 2-0. You got 2 second round stoppages. And then you go into the second round of that tournament, October 7, 2006, where you fight Joe Bunch. And Joe Bunch, I mean, just for a little context, he's from Finney's Hit Squad. His first 10 fights, his only losses are to Gerald Harris and C.B. Dalloway. And both of those fights go into the second round. So, like, Joe Bunch is – I think he's 5-0 at this time. He's a legit opponent.
Joe Bunch was a true mixed martial artist, a guy that came in with nothing as far as he was a wrestler background, but I mean, the dude had hands. He had cardio. This fight was big. Everybody was like, ooh, this should have been the finals. Yeah. They put Joe Bunch on my side. I wasn't supposed to be in the tournament. It was supposed to be Joe Bunch versus the guy I ended up fighting in the finals. They throw me in, and I knew. I was like, I can't throw no punches with this dude. And I just took him down and pounded him out. And that's when I started to develop my ground and pound. I had a bag at home, and I would beat that bag up. I would just watch Tito Ortiz videos on YouTube. I would throw punches and elbows. I met Tito a long time ago at a pool party, and I told him, I said, yo, man, your YouTube videos got me through the beginning of my career. And he was like, thanks. It was pretty cool. And I took a picture. I was straight YouTubing it, man.
So you weren't taking any jujitsu classes?
Hell no, man. I knew what jujitsu was. Mikey Burnett was a good friend of mine. But back then, it was wrestling versus jujitsu, wrestling versus boxing. It was wrestling versus the world. So
yeah,
I'm not saying I didn't care for it. I just didn't. I didn't want to, you know.
Dude, he sounds like somebody from Hammer House, doesn't he?
100%. Yeah, you would have been good up there, man.
Yeah, old school, man. It was like, you know, like Matt Hughes used to say, but. You know, that changed over the years. You had to be well-rounded. But back then, it was definitely everybody was good at something. And, you know, these guys nowadays, they're all around.
Athletes. Good at everything.
When you look at it, but Mikey Burnett is about as old school as you're going to get around there. Why? How come you didn't gravitate over there once you started doing this a little bit and maybe stick with that? Or was the Tulsa Lions then not functioning well?
Mikey was went to... He was. That's when he was in California heavy. You know, he was with the Shamrock. So he wasn't really there. And they had a good mixed martial arts group there. But I really didn't take it serious at the time. I just knew if I was in shape and I could take people down, I beat them. You know, my luck ran out later in my career. But once that happened, like I said, we'll get to that later. But yeah, I just wanted to get by with my wrestling as far as I could. I didn't plan on a career.
Okay. Now, and Gerald, I obviously know how you turned out, but were you a little bit lazy in regards to MMA at that time?
I was never lazy. I was in great shape. I never got tired in fights. I just didn't know nothing about boxing or jiu-jitsu. And those were the days when you could get away with being just a wrestler.
Yeah.
And ground
down. Yeah.
I mean, I saw Mark Coleman, and I saw what's that one dude's name? He's just kill people.
Tom Erickson.
Mark Kerr.
Mark Kerr. So it was like, I don't say I didn't need a box. I was like, I didn't need to get better at my wrestling and beat people down and get them on the ground. So I modeled my career after those guys. I was like, you know, I wasn't lazy. I just full-time wrestling. You know what I mean?
Yeah, man, I remember back in that time when, like, Mark Kerr and those guys, I remember thinking, nobody's ever going to beat these guys. I mean, that was literally my thought. I remember saying that to people. We were like, yeah, who's going to beat these guys? I mean, the evolution hadn't happened, and people didn't learn how to, like, everybody didn't know everything. It'd be literally, you'd go to a fight, this guy's a kickboxer, this guy's a wrestler, this guy's – there wasn't many multiple people who did multiple things. That's why when you started doing multiple things, you got real good real quick.
And you got the Shamrocks and all those type of guys. You're like, oh, man, this dude can fight you and stop your takedown. So, you know, it changed the game. It changed the game.
So let's look how deep this tournament is. All right, so in the second round, he's got Joe Bunch. Obviously, we've just kind of – he's a ringer. Somebody bring in to beat a hometown guy and just go, man, what happened here? So in the finals, Freestyle Cage Fighting 6 – you go up against future UFC veteran Bubba McDaniel.
Yeah. Another fight I wasn't ready for. His weakness was wrestling. He couldn't wrestle to save his life. I mean, I could have sneezed and he'd have fell down. He had no wrestling, you know. So,
but his jiu-jitsu was good.
His matchup for me was way better than Joe Bunch. He had decent striking. Yeah, he had decent striking. And his jiu-jitsu was really good. But he didn't have no wrestling. I mean, none. So I just took him down at will. It wasn't the most exciting fight, but it was some good slams. And I ended it violently, like literally. I didn't say I did it on purpose, but I used to practice that slam. And it was designed to knock the wind out of people and end up breaking his ribs. So I just.
Gerald, now, to me, like, a lot of times you get good wrestlers, great wrestlers, Olympic caliber wrestlers. They still get submitted. How do you not get submitted? We're not even doing any jiu-jitsu. I mean, you watch. I don't understand. I mean, usually, like, you need some really good wrestlers, and they take people down. They get choked. They get armbar. How do you not? Did you just power out of it? How'd that happen?
When I first started fighting, there was a guy, an old wrestler from my gym named Daniel Roberts, and he fought on that card with us we talked about before. I don't know if that's ever happened, two high school teammates fighting on the UFC card, but he was just getting into jiu-jitsu, but he was training with the Diaz brothers and what's that guy's name that trains with Diaz brothers?
Jake Shields,
yes. And he was just like showing me arm bars and triangles. And he never taught me offense. He only taught me defense. He's like, if somebody puts you in an arm bar, pull your arm out. They put you in a triangle, you know, turn this way. And, you know, if they put you in this, and that's all we worked. And that was all we worked. You know, not often, just every, it was for fun though. It was like funny. It was like, hey, look at this thing I learned, like this arm bar thing. We didn't know what we were doing, you know. I just knew his nuts was on my elbow. That's all I I don't like that. Man.
Get that off. Yeah, that was good.
Yeah. But no, it was fun, you know, for me. And it was just more of a, I'm gonna wrestle you, and if you put me in an arm bar, I'm gonna get my arm out and punch you in the face. And if you try to punch, I'm gonna take you down. It was literally. Yeah, so, I was forced to evolve in my career later.
Yeah, in order to properly set that table up in regards to this, so Gerald Harris comes in 3-0. Obviously, he's really not training MMA or jiu-jitsu at this time, but he's stopped everybody, including Joe Bunch. In this one, Bubba McDaniel comes in at 5-1. The first round, Gerald is struggling because the guard of Bubba is super crafty and
he was tall. He was like 6'5".
Yeah, super lengthy. Joe gets three okay slams on there. And then in the second, Joe continued to get the takedowns. When he slammed him, Bubba McDaniel, it's almost as if it's like a hostage situation and he's walking out of a gas station. he is both hands up, howling in pain because of how many ribs do you know how many you broke?
Enough to make him quit. I don't
know. Bro,
I wasn't counting. It was bad though.
It's a like highlight reel slam that the UFC or any major organization would make it part of their intro of you know, for every event. All right, so your next one, like everybody's records, like online, especially at that time, they're a little spotty. I think this might be one of them. February 10th, 2007, they got you up against an 0-6 Harvell Hunter.
Yeah, Harvell Hunter. Now, that I don't know how to tell my record, but it should have been fixed. He supposedly had a car accident on the way to the fight. It got canceled. There was no fight that night. It didn't happen. I don't know how to tell my record, but I don't know what that was.
Yeah,
that
promoter was, probably did it because he was angry at him. Okay, so
it was like a
guys
forfeit.
Like Harvell, even though he didn't show up, man, they make events go. I mean, they're incredibly valuable. Like, you know, like Harvell Hunter, Brian Titus, guys like, in that category, they make events happen. So I have no issue with those people whatsoever. March 10, 2007, you're now main event status against Travis Fowler. Are you a big ticket seller at this point?
Yeah, but the problem, it wasn't in my hometown. And that was actually a title defense. Travis Fowler, I believe, had held the title before. He's actually a commissioner now in Oklahoma. It's pretty cool when I talk to him. Heavy hands. Really short guy, hard to take down. No wrestling again. I got lucky. He put it on me. I beat him, but it was tough. But I'll tell you this, and no excuses. I mean, the fight was 50 years ago, but I had a stomach bug before that, man. I remember that fight. Everything went wrong. I had a stomach flu, which makes you dehydrate. I remember getting lightheaded during the fight. And they played the wrong walkout song when I came out. I'm a vibe person, man. And I mean, it killed my vibe. I was like, really? I played a terrible song when I come out? So, yeah, that was pretty bad. It was just a horrible fight.
We just had a guy just fought for organization, Cameron Van Camp, and he beat the guy in about a minute and 2 seconds. And afterwards, he said the guy was on the internet talking. He's like, man, if we fight 10 times, I'm going to win 9 of them. You got lucky. I had the great camp. And he said, I had the best walkout I've ever had. I said, what? He said he had the best walkout. Who's ever? What does that mean?
I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll tell you this, though. That what bothered me is, they played a slow song when I came in. I mean, bro, I'm talking about like bedroom slow jam. I was like, yo, what is
everybody looking at you?
Yeah, I mean, it was like bumping and grinding. I was like, what version of the song did you get? Like, so it was bad. I'm walking to the cage like, you can't be tough.
Threw you off.
Yeah, he's talking about being between the sheets. I'm like, yeah, dog, I don't want to.
So they brought you in as an opponent. Like, he was the ticket seller, you were the B-side.
Oh, no, I was selling tickets like crazy. It was just went in my hometown, so it made it a little difficult, a little bit further away from me. I remember all those fights other than the first one, all those were in Tulsa. So I was the hometown, and this is my first time really traveling as a fighter for real. So it was a little challenging not being in my hometown, but I still pulled it off.
So when you were in Tulsa, and you were – was Bo Taylor working out with you in – there as well?
Not really. Bo was around, the one-man army. He was big back then. But no, I didn't. Me and Bo never really crossed paths till later in my career. But he was always a good dude.
That's cool. Okay, well, here, at this point, the LFA and, there's organizations that are feeder systems for the UFC. Titan FC happens to be one of them. And they bring you in the main event in Kansas City against former UFC veteran Curtis Stout.
Ooh, tough one.
Well, I'm going to jump ahead a little bit. They owe me I'll start. I took the fight because, again, he didn't have no wrestling. So he had fought Anderson Silva, Phil Baroni, and my coach and my manager, Jason Nicholson, was like, do not stand up with this guy. He going to whoop your ass. Don't stand up. He's like, as soon as you touch gloves, shoot. Like, don't even breathe. Yeah, so I wrestled this guy to death. I held him down as best as I could. I ground and pound the hell out of him. And I just expected three rounds of, you know, good ground and pound and keeping him off his feet. I mean, it was a good fight because, I mean, he was throwing some, bam, 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 bam. He's throwing some shots and I shoot right up under him. It was perfect clash of styles. And I'll never forget this to this day. They make the noise on the ground, tap, 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 tap. And Curtis, I'm in his guard. He's holding my arms. His coach is right here, bro, right here, and goes, Curtis, 10 seconds. Relax. And he looks when his coach says that. And I just throw this nasty hammer fist, bro. I hit him right in his chin, right here. He stares into the sky like a zombie, man. I mean, I've never seen it in my life. I go, wham, and he literally goes. And I was like, I think he's asleep. Like, you know, like I hit him hard. And it was like, doop. I mean, I knew. And that's one of those Tito Ortiz drills, man. Hammer fist on the ground. Hammer fist. There was no padding on the glove right here.
Yeah.
One of the hardest places you can hit somebody. And I put Curtis Stout, I mean, dead. He was dead. It's probably one. If you look at that fight, there's probably 1 second left in that round.
Wow. Out.
He's got to thank his manager for his coach for that one, huh?
He said, yeah. Curtis, 10 seconds, relax. He's like, hey, okay, well, wham. I whacked him, bro. Like, I'm a little brother, so I'm like really like sneaky and stuff. You know what I mean? Like I'll sucker punch you. I don't care.
So, man, next time you should have you should have your coach yell in there next time. Relax, relax.
10 not seconds. To me, relax. Not to me.
All right. So at this point in your career, you're 7-0 with 5 finishes and 2 decisions. Like that is fantastic with the UFC bet. And then April 3rd, 2007. That IFL's radar. How does that take place?
So I think I was 5-0 at that point. 6-0.
And then 6-0. That Harold, yeah.
So, right. Yeah, the other one didn't count. He didn't.
The car accident. So I'm 6-0, and I'm like, you know what? Somebody invited me. I don't remember who invited me. They're like, yo, you 6-0. You need to start training. My manager at the time, my good friend, he's like, he's like, my goal is to get you to the next level. I'm like, cool. So Team Quest is the first team I ever visited in my life. First time I ever sparred. But mind you guys, I never sparred in my life. And I'm sparring Chael Sonnen. I'm sparring Chris Lieben. I'm sparring so many crazy.
Evan Tanner.
Herman. Evan Tanner wasn't there at the time. He was gone. This is whenever they split. He split with Dan Henderson.
Dan went to Temecula. Okay.
Yes. So... I mean, it's just a room full of just monsters. The whole IFL team is there. Chris Horwich is there. I mean, it's just these names, and they're all around my weight, 55 to 85. And I'm just getting, I'm like, this is what y'all do every day is beat the dog. I mean, I got my ass whooped. Because it wasn't like you can shoot. It was like, hey, well, we're kickboxing. I'm like, what you mean? Oh. I can't get a double leg? No, dog. Oh, I was getting tore up. Like, so... I was like, you know what? I need to do this full time. And I while I was out there, mind you, while I was out there, I was just there for 1 week. I flew out there to train just to figure it out. The IFL team, the Wolfpack versus what's that Brazilian Gracie's team, the Pit Bulls.
Yeah, out of New York. Yeah.
The Wolfpack's 85 pounder got hurt. I don't know who it was. He got injured in training. And he's like, yo, you want to take this fight? I was like, I guess, yeah. And it was on 6-day notice, I think. 6 days. I was going to fight the next weekend. I'm like, how much it pay? Like 1-1? He's like, no, 10-10. I'm like, 10 what? 10,000. I was yeah, so I quit my job. No, I didn't quit, but I put my notice in. Yeah, I was making $7 an hour still.
Hey, and, you know how many $600 cars that buys?
Yeah, exactly.
You could have had a whole fleet of them, dude. You could have had a whole fleet of them.
I mean,
you could have started a $600 car lot.
Now, here was a catch. And Matt Lindland, I mean, he was a manager and a coach. In order for me to take that fight, I had to sign with Team Quest. So he became my manager and my coach all in one. And I signed to fight the IFL, and I signed with the contracts were side by side.
Damn.
And yeah. So, and it was okay. It worked out okay. But I never won a fight with the Team Quest. I went 0-2. So we'll get to that too.
All right. So,
quick question before we go into there. So, your first time sparring, you're going into this gym full of killers. usually when I go into a gym and you got a guy, even if they sparred 1, 2, 10 times, they're not good to spar with. They go too hard. They don't know how to control rank. I mean, were you cracking people? Were you like hitting hard? Because I knew people are erratic.
I was blocking. That's what I was doing. Chris Lieben, left hand is like a bowling ball on the end of a chain. So, I mean, if your hands weren't up, he's going to crack you. And they were throwing some leather. So they knew I was a new guy. They was kicking my butt. But Chael Sonnen, if anybody's ever worked out with Chael Sonnen, is the hardest and lightest workout partner I've worked in my life. He will not hit you hard. He's smooth. It's like he's drilling on you when you train with him, even when you're going live. And I remember that, and I said, I like that. I like this style. So I kind of mimicked myself after that. But you know what? I didn't know how to punch at the time. You have to kind of, and you know, Chris, you got those guys in the gym that want to fight. And I'm like, ugh. So I had to fight a couple of times. But overall, I like this Chael Sonnen style of training.
I'm with you.
That's cool. So to set up why he got paid 10 and 10, it's Fabio Leopoldo and Gerald lost a split decision. Fabio is like a super high-end Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt. Going into that fight,
three-time world champion at that point.
There we go. Did that even bother you? Did it weigh in on you? Did you care?
I didn't even know what the hell that was. I was like,
Is that good?
So what we did was we watched videos of Fabio. Like, okay, that's an arm bar. So put myself in an arm bar, pull my arm out. And like, that's a triangle. I put myself in every move that he did in the fights. And that was it. I didn't have no black belts working with me. It was me and my homeboy, like, at the house. I didn't even train the Team Quest for the Fabio Leopoldo fight.
Wow.
So I went back home, you know, and just went back to my regular schedule. But I knew that I had heavy hands. And if you watch that fight, for one, there's very few fights where I don't say I'm not a sore loser. You can watch that fight 100 times. I've never in my life, including Fabio Leopoldo, met one person that said I lost that fight. He put me in a lot of submissions, but I was whooping his ass. I mean, I was hitting him. I was slamming him. It was a beautiful fight. And then in the third round, I hit him with a 1-2. My daddy, long time ago, never forget it, my daddy taught me how to throw a 1-2. And I was a right-handed southpaw. So in the third round, I take a step back on purpose, and he comes forward, and I laid him out. Pow, pow. That's all I had. There wasn't no hooks, wasn't no uppercuts. All I had was a 1-2. That was the first time in my life that I ever threw a punch in a fight, and I dropped it.
Wow.
And I fell in love with it. I was like, oh, my God, that's what it feels like to hit people?
A lot better.
Yeah, it's way better than shooting it on a double leg. And, I mean, if you guys have time, that fight is on YouTube.
I couldn't find it.
Oh, it's on there. I'll send you a link. And I'll send you the link. I'll send it to you.
Gerald, I need you to be honest with this. All right, I'm a friggin' psycho when it comes to finding fights. Did you have YouTube scrubbed of a lot of your independent fights so people couldn't study film?
No, I just didn't put them on there. I never put them on there. None of them were broadcasted where they posted them. Because all people did was watch them and learn how you fight. I enjoyed not having my fights on YouTube. And then when I learned how to box, this is the biggest trick of my career. When I learned how to box, I put a highlight on YouTube right before the Ultimate Fighter. I had this little highlight on YouTube. It was all slams, literally. So after I got out, you know, later in my career, that's all people would see is the slam video. They didn't know I could box. So, it was, you know, it's pretty cool. But I didn't like fights being on YouTube.
When did you start learning how to box? Well, am I jumping ahead? Is this? Have you already started learning to box at this point?
Oh no, we'll get there because after the Fabio Leopoldo fight, I signed a Team Quest. I moved to Beaverton, Oregon. I forgot what Team Quest was at. I forgot what the town it was. I moved to Oregon. I'm there full time. Right after that fight, school ends. I fought in April. School's out in May. I moved in May, literally. And I was there for about a year. And while I was there, I got the Benji Raddick fight, which was a horrible fight for me. Benji Raddick was like me times 10 with punches. So, he was a good wrestler.
He was tough, man.
Yeah, man. And they kind of played me. I haven't ever told this story, and I can't think of the guy's name. And this is when I'm new to fighting. I remember going trainer Team Quest, and he was a Team Quest guy. A lot of people know Benji Raddick was a Team Quest guy.
Yeah, Benji Raddick is from that bad team era.
His coach came to our gym and sparred with me a whole bunch of rounds. And I didn't know. I was like, but he was a fighter too. I can't think of his name, but
is it Matt Hume?
No, it's Holman. Nope.
Dennis Holman.
He's the one that wore those little underwear at the weigh-ins and got
Dennis Holman. That was in the
Dennis
fight.
Holman came in and sparred with me a whole bunch of rounds, and I kept wondering why he was changing angles and he was just sparring with me. And then somebody said, "Hey, bro, he's scouting you out." I said, "What do you mean scout me out?" It was like, he trains Benji Raddick. He trains across town. He told Benji Raddick everything. So Benji was ready for that fight. He already had an advantage. So that's probably the only time in my career where I just, other than, you know, my other loss, I just got dominated, man. It was nothing I could do to Benji. I think I slammed him one time, but that was nothing. That was like, he dropped me. He didn't knock me out, but he knocked me down. Thank God that referee jumped in. He was about to knock my head off my shoulders.
Yeah, I got a quick question for you, because you kind of hinted at it. When you showed up in Team Quest, you know, you like jail style, but that there were a couple of guys in there that were, you know, headhunters or playing rough in there. You want to give us some names? Who was a little bit of a dick in there?
Well, I wouldn't call him that. It just, everybody's just different. Chris Lieben sparred hard. No matter what you did, he's going to bust you
up. I can see that.
He threw that left hand from hell. I'll tell you, Ed Herman and Chael Sonnen were the smoothest training partners. The guys who were just crazy, I didn't really remember their names. There's nothing wrong with sparring hard, but I just remember the guys that sparred too hard never fought that hard in fights. Now, there's times in training where we get heated. Me and my boy, we bang out, we bleed, and we tap gloves afterwards. But I know this sport is real. It's not the same intensity. It's not the same environment. I'm trying to get better. If you catch me with a shot, hey, how'd you catch me? What did you do? Oh, I stepped to the left. You bob your head too much. Hey, your head's over your feet. I learn while I'm sparring, and I still get a good workout. But no, it's just guys. They call them gym heroes.
Yeah. So that's the best thing about being in there and sparring. It's just like just figuring out how to hit and not get hit. You know, it's like a chess match. Figuring out, what do I have to do to make this guy, you know, you figure it out as you go in there with that new guy. And that's what a fight's like. So I love going in there and just trying to figure that out. But yeah, the goal of going out there and just trying to kill a guy, that doesn't make any sense to me, because there's a lot of gym heroes and there's a lot of guys who are so much better at the gym. So much better. You don't want to be that guy.
Yeah, and it happens in every sport. Guys are wrestling. I got guys you can't even drill with. You can't even shoot on them because they won't. I'm like, bro, you don't wrestle like that. You go out there and get your ass whooped. Why are you trying to be – like, get better. You know what I'm saying? You're trying to win in the wrong spot. Like, there's no referees. There's no judges. There's no paydays. You're supposed to get better every day you go.
So you've got two losses in a row at this point, and you had said – I mean, think about this. You don't take MMA serious – you're murking people, you're finishing them. Now you decide to take it serious and you take two losses in a row. Where is your mindset at this point?
So that was mostly, I'm trying to think, I may have this wrong. I think I moved there after the Benji loss. No, I didn't move there. At that point, okay, this is what happened. At that point, I just knew I needed to work on my striking. There was a boxing coach there. He's still around. He's still in Oregon. He's actually Chael's boxing coach. Nicest guy I've met in my life. His name is slipping my mind right now. It'll come back to me later. And I started working with the boxing coach once a week. And the only thing he taught me, he said, "Look, man, I can't teach you how to throw 1-2-3s. He said, "You're a right-handed southpaw." He taught me a stiff jab. And that was my favorite punch my entire career. And I have really heavy hands. And when I jabbed you, it felt like a straight right. You know, and I mean, I fake and I doom. I mean, it was hard. I mean, I hit people, and when I landed, they dropped. You know. It was kind of fun because people don't expect hard jabs. I threw my jab like a straight punch, you know, and it got to you quick. So, anyway, I started training and getting my boxing right, and I got better. So that was pretty much the main goal, was to get better in boxing.
See, you say converted southpaw. I say more of a standard wrestler that's not going to change like the way he's going to shoot.
Well, a lot of wrestlers don't. I talked to Rashad Evans about that. And what they do is they go pop, pop, change stances, and then they shoot. I ain't have time for all that. So a lot of wrestlers will go orthodox and still shoot southpaw. They just, a lot of wrestlers get addicted to throwing hands, so they don't even care to shoot, you know?
Okay. Sure. You got two losses in a row. Obviously, it's not affecting you. You're pushing forward. And you fight November 3rd, 2007 for FTP Global Showdown against Jeremiah Sanders.
First time I ever dropped somebody with a punch. I hit him. I hit him with that stiff jab, Chris. I mean, I hit him in the eyeball. Wait, let me tell you, messed up, though. So I stiff jab him, and he drops. I ain't never dropped nobody in my life. So I punch him. Bow! He just wobbles. So while he drops like a flash knockdown, and as he's coming up, I lat drop the hell out of it. Like, it was dirty. Like, it was, I didn't even know where he was at, bro. I could have walked off after that jab. And he kind of fell into me, and I'm just like, I mean, it was like a perfect fight. So, yeah, that was a big one. It was a good win. I mean, he wasn't the toughest opponent in the world. And that got me back in the win column, which was great, set up for me, you know, moving forward in my career.
Well, I think it also propelled you to the Ultimate Fighter. From there, you know, January 27, 2008, just, you know, about 2 months later, you're out in Vegas, you know, sitting in the Tough House.
Yeah, I got lucky, honestly. They didn't give a shit about my record or anything. I was eating lunch with Ed Herman, and I was telling him how I'm that highlight video that's still on YouTube to this day. That kid was a really good kid. Took a bunch of VHS tapes and made that highlight video for me. I said, hey, I'm trying to get an Ultimate Fighter. He said, man, let me make a phone call. He just called this lady. I don't know who she was. Mom, sleep, baby. He called her, and she was like, Endora, I'm telling you, you could hear her digging through the tapes. Like a box of VHS tapes. And she's like, oh, here it is. And she puts it in. She's like, oh, my God. Like, she sees me just slamming people. Boom, boom. This highlight video was crazy. And that was it. She's like, all right, I got you. And I was on the show. I got flew out to Vegas, interviews. I mean, I had to do the work after that. But, and Chris, you know it, man. Who you know is very important. And I was talented enough. So it wasn't like I sucked and I just got a hookup.
You looked the part. You looked the part, man. Going there like, oh, yeah. This guy's amazing.
And I needed that extra push. I had no connections. They would have never saw that tape. They had hundreds of tapes.
Yeah.
I mean, she's digging through a box of tapes, bro. I don't know how she found mine. So, yeah, and I got on the show.
Now, what you got out there? That was kind of like a rough Ultimate Fighter, wasn't it? Like, you got there and you had a fight to get in the house. Was that
like the first time, right?
Yeah, it was a blessing and a curse. When I got Ultimate Fighter back in them days, you basically made it in the UFC. Every Ultimate Fighter I ever saw, the guys were in the house and then they got a fight at the fight night and the winner got to be in the UFC. And if you had a good fight, both of you in the UFC. So I'm like, I'm in the UFC. I'm good. So I quit my job. I canceled my lease in my apartment. I moved in with my mama. I didn't have nothing. I sold my car. I didn't have nothing. Gave my mama the money. Hey, just use this while I'm gone. You know, and it was pretty crazy. I had two kids at the time. And I went to the show like, I'm in. I'm about to win this thing, or at least I'm going to get on in the UFC. And I never forget, two vans pulled up. And me and 16 guys in the van, we like, what's that van? And somebody's like, oh, I was like, it's two vans. We go inside the gym, and maybe 5 minutes later, these other guys come walking in. And I mean, it was like a face-off. And they're like, yeah, you're going to fight those guys and get on the show. And we're like, people start freaking out because everybody quit their job. You know, we were all like wrestling coaches. And I was a maintenance man in my apartment complex. You know, like, I gave up a lot of stuff, man.
Man, crazy.
Wow. So you beat Mike Modello to get on the show. And, you know, you get on the show, and then on February 15, 2008, you fight the eventual season winner, Amir Sadulaya.
Dollar. At that point, I mean, you guys got to think, I started fighting in August of 2006, and that fight was when? In
2008. February, yeah.
Yeah, it was the very beginning of 2008.
Yeah, so I had only been training for about maybe a few months. I've been fighting for about a year. When I got to Sadala, I still had the same old stiff jab and double leg. That's all I had. I had no jiu-jitsu. I had never put a gi on. I had never rolled really other than, you know, a little bit at the Team Quest. Just a month or two at Team Quest ain't going to do it for you. You know what I'm saying? Or a couple months at Team Quest ain't going to do it for you. So and when I was at Team Quest, I wasn't living there. I was back and forth. I'd go there for 2 weeks and then I'd go back home. I moved in with my mom and all that kind of stuff. I'd go there for 2 weeks. I'd go home. And then I eventually moved there. But by the time I moved there, I was on Ultimate Fighter like 2 months later. Anyway, I wasn't ready for it. You know, Amir was pretty well-rounded. He had great striking.
For sure.
He was a kickboxer. He had really good sneaky jiu-jitsu that nobody knew about.
He didn't have a record, though.
He was hard to hold down. He was 0-0. But he was a
sick weapon. He had no record.
He fought like hell of times, but I think it was amateur. So the dude could fight. I mean, he won the whole damn show. But his jiu-jitsu was super sneaky. I mean, he armbarred CB Dolloway twice, I think.
Wow.
I think he was one of those Henzo New York students. But how were the workouts there as compared to like what you were normally used to?
Terrible. Ultimate Fighter workouts suck. It's a bunch of guys that are fighting against each other, training each other. It was the weirdest thing ever. The only thing that I liked about it is I would get one-on-one pad work. You know, it's just hard to train with somebody that you got to fight, like literally straight up. You know, I think I fell trapped into that team crap and started thinking these guys are my friends and teammates. We all trying. It was like Hunger Games, man. Like you got to take heads off. So the workouts are really bad there. You really have to make the most out of it. You're not in your environment. You don't have your coach. The best thing about the Ultimate Fighter is they take care of you like crazy. You think whatever food you want, they cater to it. I did like it. And that was the main thing. I was like, man, I never ate like this before. So, you know, that's about it. But the training is pretty bad.
You know, one thing I learned when I was a long time ago when I was in Japan, I remember I went there and one of the guys, you know, I was young. I was trying to still prove I was a badass. You know, I wanted them to like me. So they brought a guy and they're like, why don't you roll up with this guy, Chris? I was like, all right. So I knew who he was. He won like the Neo Blood tournament. So I start submitting him and I'm like, oh, I'm proud of myself. I'm like, I'm a badass. And I'm like, this guy's not very good, you know? So I leave and I'm full of myself. I'm like, yeah, they know how good I am now, you know? So about 6 months later, they're like, Chris, what, you're going to fight this guy? I was like, easy fight, man. I'm going to kill this guy. Little did I know that dude was a veteran and his ass wasn't even trying when he fought me. He was trying to learn what I did.
Yes.
He didn't try nothing. So when we fought, none of my moves were because he knew what I was going to do. So I learned that there. When I went on the Ultimate Fighter and I was training there, I wasn't showing all my stuff. You know what I mean? I learned.
You can't go in there kicking everybody's ass.
No, you go in there and you let them do their stuff. And like, I know what you're good at now. So I learned that from being, you got me once. It's not going to happen again. So was that the kind of thing in the Ultimate Fighter? Do you think that you felt people were just learning what you were doing in it? Because you compared to the Hunger Games, like they weren't going all out. They weren't your friends. They were trying to get stuff from you.
Everybody knew I could wrestle. That was my main thing in my ground and pound. So I didn't have much to hide.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Sorry. I didn't have much to hide, but they knew. They didn't know how powerful I was. I wasn't picking people up. You know, they had watched my videos, though. Forrest told me. Forrest was like, you know, I think Amir was the number one pick, and I was like almost last. So our plan was to take Amir out because he didn't have any grappling. I was like, it was a good matchup. So they watched my videos. They're like, he's just a wrestler. I mean, they literally got lucky when he caught me and I went down. But no, training was just, I'll tell you this. Forrest Griffin, and I love Rampage, trained Amir for our fight. He trained. He watched video. He brought it to him like, hey, this is what we need to do. Fight this guy. Mind you, we weren't allowed to watch TV. They trained for me. I just went in there and fought. Like, I had no game plan, nothing. So, yeah. And Rampage said himself, he's like, I suck as a coach. So, I mean, nobody coached me for that fight. They expected me to go out there and just do my thing.
I understand.
Yeah, Rampage would have probably been like, pick him up and slam him. I mean,
pretty much.
Yeah, you can do that, Rampage. I can't do that. You know what I mean?
That only worked for so long. I mean, I did. That was my thing. So, but I just needed more at that point to win Ultimate Fighter. Like, CB Dalloway would have been a horrible matchup for me. I mean, the guy had striking, wrestling. So, yeah. I mean,
I got I got a question. I want to take you back to what you said. I imagine like an old West saloon with the 16 guys in the first van, and then the second van shows up, and you said it was like a showdown.
It was a standoff.
Like, how long before you were actually in the ring, the weigh-ins? Like, how did all that, like, take me through that day and how long hours. It was. 48 hours.
48 hours. You weighed in the next day, and you fought the day after that. So,
and how'd your opponent get picked? Dana made it up?
They just picked them. You didn't get to pick who you fought. I think they matched people up. Like, hey, Harris is a grappler. This guy's a striker. Either Harris going to get knocked out or Harris going to take him down. And I played it safe. Why would I break my hand or risk injury in the fight to get in the house? So I just took him down, beat him down. And, you know, I know those guys try to impress the UFC, but I'm like, I need to win to get in. This ain't, you know, they got, what's that show they got now? The Contenders. This ain't the Contenders. And I did my job. I went down there, took him down. I ground and pound the hell out that dude. He had zero wrestling. So, and my cardio was always on point, you know, so I beat him down. But
it seemed like you hit a cardio wall in that fight, though. Am I off on that?
Wait, a minute, Amir, or that
with the mirror?
No. You're talking about the fight to get in the house. Fight to get in the house. When I fought that guy, it was a good matchup for me. I never tired in the mirror fight, not at all. He just caught me with a good shot. But no, I wasn't tired at all. I felt great. So.
And when did you find out that you weren't fighting in the finale?
After that fight, I got hurt. I tore pretty much every ligament in my ankle. That wasn't on film. I was on crutches. He tore my cornea too. Amir Sadala's fingernail. I remember second round, I said, hey man, there's something in my eye, They kept dabbing on it. If you watch the video, his fingernail cut my eye so bad that the skin from my eye was hanging out of my eyeball.
When
I closed my eye, it closed on the skin of my eye. So I was blinking, going, what the hell's in my eye? It was my skin. So he tore my cornea with his fingernail. I couldn't see.
Oh, is that
it.
Gross?
I mean, it really
he cheated.
I had the same game plan. I'm going to shoot. I'm going to slam you. And I was winning the fight, slam him. He didn't land no strikes, kick, punch, takedown. And I got up from a shot, and he brought this knee up out of nowhere, hit me right in the temple. And when I say flash knockdown, it was like, doop. I was like, whoa, that was quick. And as soon as he kneed me, I dove in on a single leg and I'm squeezing it. And I know this drill. I'm like, okay, I'm hurt right now. And I'm looking at the referee. I have this single leg. The referee's right here. And he's like, come on, Harris. I said, I'm good. I'm like, I'm good. And I'm looking at the guy. And he goes, oh, that's it. None of these punches. And Mira's like, swinging. And I'm literally like this, holding his leg. He's not hitting me or anything. And I jump up instantly and protest. Like, bro, what the hell? I'm talking to you. Why would you stop the fight? Like, I'm literally talking to you. Well, I didn't see you improving. I was like,
that was what referee was it?
Huh? I can't think of it. He's the one that got in trouble for selling weed or something.
Oh,
Gosh, Rosenthal.
Rosenthal. And Rosenthal was just like, bro, I'm talking to you, literally. In a single leg going, I'm good. You know what I mean? And he stopped the fight, man.
So you were the one who called and set him up for the rest, probably.
No, I didn't do it. But hey, and I broke down, man. And a lot of people understand why I broke down is I cried so hard when I lost that fight. You know, I've never watched that video to this day.
Oh, wow.
The reason why is, Chris, I gave up.
Exactly.
I didn't get paid. I didn't get paid for the first fight to get the house. I didn't get paid for a Mr. Dollar fight. I got $500 a week, and I sent that $500 a week home every week. I sent it home. So I went home to nothing, no job. I was living with my mama. I didn't have a car. I didn't have no money. So when I lost that fight, I broke down. I lost everything. I was crying, but I was like, you know what? I'm going to heal up. I'm going to train for this. I wanted to be the Ultimate Fighter so bad. You know, I seen Rashad Evans and other guys win it.
Yep.
And I felt like I lost everything. And Rampage said, bro, you good. You still got a chance to get on the UFC. So
I don't think people don't really understand, like, how much of a lot, not the long shot, I mean, but how much people put into that. I mean, it's like you took every dollar and bought your last lottery ticket. I mean, it's everything you guys riding on this thing. You just sitting there hoping that everything works out.
But it doesn't.
It's so depressing, man.
It's depressing, and people couldn't understand. My friends And then let me tell you something that's crazy. I'm not jumping ahead, but check this out. So you know the clause in the UFC, you can't tell nobody you lost, right? So
yeah.
We having fight parties. The first episode, me getting in the house. We're at a bar. There's like 100 people there that are cheering. Yeah, I got in the house. There, every episode we're watching together at this bar. The episode where I fight, I'm like, I'm not going to the bar. So I knew I was going to lose. So I go to my homeboy's house. He invites the whole neighborhood. There's like 20 people in the house. And we're sitting there. They're like, yeah, I'm slamming this dude. And you know, I'm beating the mirror. First round. Second round comes. Whoop, he knees me. I go down. Wham, 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 wham. I'm like, the whole room just looks at me. I'm like, sorry, guys.
Oh, man.
I would have probably, you know, you should have done.
To watch me lose, and I already knew.
You should have, like, just watched the first round, and after the conclusion, I'm like, I'm going to go to the bathroom and just hop out the window and just take off and go.
I'm playing the TV, man.
Gerald, the thing is when you lost and you were upset, you were like, I wasn't out. Like,
oh, I was pissed.
But you got to see your grit. And that's important, man. Like, you care.
No, it didn't feel like it at the time, I bet.
I take that win over that grit.
But let me ask you, you know what?
I don't think I would have won the Ultimate Fighter. I most likely would not have beat CB Dolloway. And after the show, I went and trained with him. He's a good dude. They took care of me. I trained pretty much everywhere. I got invited to a lot of camps because of my wrestling. So I developed a lot of friendships on that show to this day. But I wasn't ready for that show at the time. I wasn't ready. So
I got questions, though, here. Because, like, you know, we haven't even touched upon the fact that, you know, you just stand up. And obviously you've got charisma and things like that. Like, the TV people, like you said, you know, I think it was Ed Herman made a phone call for you. The woman was like, oh, yeah, we'll take him. You know what I mean? You check off a lot of boxes. I know Mike loves it when I say that.
I do.
How was the conversation that you weren't going to get back, you know, that they weren't going to take you for the
next time? Why are they pushing you? Like, why are they making a push?
Here's what happened. A whole bunch of us didn't get invited back. Maybe six guys out of the 16. I know, obviously, what's the name? Dumbass got in trouble and got kicked off. He got to the finals but got kicked off. So CB fights another guy to get in the final. They had a rematch, another fight to get in the finale. CB got beat by Amir in the semifinals.
Was it Judy Browning? Who was it?
No, JT Money.
Jesse, whatever, Jesse.
Jesse Taylor.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, JT Taylor, else. Yeah.
So they took those two guys that lost, made them fight each other. It was cool because it was like a twist to the show. Jesse Taylor got kicked off the video, breaking windows. Mind you, I went to bed that night. Every Ultimate Fighter, everybody knows, the last day of the show, they take you out to eat and they take you to the bars, whatever.
Yep.
I went to the bar. I was at the bar for 20 minutes. I got a cab to my hotel and I went to bed. Because I'm not going to hang out with 16 fighters. Like, that's nothing good's going to happen. Something bad's going to happen. And I'm glad I did.
Listen to this dude.
No, you know, I mean, they put you in a house for 6 weeks, 8 weeks. You can't do anything. No contact with people. And they give you about $500, take you at the restaurant, strip club, and go run amok. It's insane, man. I'm surprised there's not trouble.
I cashed out at the Boom Boom Room. I was like, hey. Cash me out, girl, and then it cashed out, and I went to my room.
I said, "Hey, here's 500. Give me. You can keep 100." And this took off.
Yeah, give me four. And then I went to bed. I went straight to bed, and I woke up. I heard all the news. Anyway, those two end up fighting, and back to me. I don't know how long after I got a phone call. It's Joe Silva. I'm like, hell yeah! I'm training my ass off. Now, mind you, after I lost on the Ultimate Fighter. I went back home. Remember, I left Oregon because I got on the show. I couldn't afford to be there for 6 weeks and leave my family back, you know, in Oregon. So I said, hey, I told Matt Lindland, we'll come back after the show. I'm going to be in the UFC. I lose, and I'm like, I'm training. I said, Matt, I'm still Team Quest. I'm training back home. I said, I'll come back after the finale when I can afford to live there. I had no money. I had nothing. I couldn't live in Oregon. So Joe Silva calls me, I don't know how long after the show, and I'm like, yo, what's up, Joe? He's like, I'm thinking I'm about to get my matchup. You know, Joe calls you getting a fight.
You say,
hey, man, I'm probably let you know you're not going to fight on the finale. We got to let you go. I was like, let me go. I was like, I fought my butt off. I wanted to get in the house. He's like, I'm sorry, man. He said, we changed it up this year. And if you can't, he said, if you can't make it on the Ultimate Fighter, you'll never make it in the UFC. And I said, Mr. Silva, I promise you that I'm going to get better. And I promise you that I'll be in the UFC. And I'll never forget those words when he said that. And he said, he said, win a bunch of fights and give me a call. That's what he told me.
Man, now I'm going to come back just a minute before you talk about, the feeling when you first lost to Amir. I remember, you know, when I got on the Ultimate Fighter and, you know, I fought, made to the finale. The winner of that one got like $100,000. You had a fight with, you know, the champ St. Pierre at the time. You got $100,000 sponsored. So it was like $250,000 pretty much to the winner. The loser got like very, very little. So losing that, I just felt, I mean, like I lost a split decision there and it like almost crushed me. But at the end of the day, I feel like that was like a turning point in my life. When I had to suck it up, be like, you know, no matter what's going to happen, I'm going to figure it out and be successful. You know what I mean? Do you feel like that was a turning point for you? Or do you feel like when you had to face that, did it almost break you, or what happened with that?
No, honestly, it was the opposite. We'll get to the breaking part later. It was the most of all my career. Remember, I came up short my whole life. I was a state runner-up in elementary, middle school, high school. I was a qualifier in college. I won my conference.
Yeah.
Ranked number four in the country, get to the tournament, have a bad tournament. I never won anything significant until I won that tournament when I first started fighting. So yeah. I'm like, this is my thing. This is my
destiny, man,
to finally be a champion. Like I said, I can't beat Kel Sanderson 100 times out of 100. I can't. It's not happening. I'm not going to catch Kel Sanderson. Good night, baby. And pin him. It's not happening. He's going to beat me every time. Okay? But I can knock his ass out.
Yeah.
Okay? And I finally found the one thing in my life that I could actually control. And I felt like, you know what? I'm about to prove this guy wrong. You know? And when he said that, he said, you'll never be in the UFC. And I said, Mr. Silva, but how do we get in the UFC? Just win a bunch of fights and give me a call. And I literally made a hit list, and I just kept going after people. Literally, I was calling every organization. If anybody got cut from the UFC, I tried to fight them. I was on a mission. So I if you look at my record, it was just win, 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 win. Maybe one or two decisions, but I was knocking people out. So I was working my way back in.
Yeah, your first fight after the Ultimate Fighter was July 12, 2008. And it was against C3 Fights for Brandon McDowell. And you made pretty quick work of him, multiple slams, some heavy ground and pound, you know, another first round victory.
Yep, I was trying to get my goal, my whole goal. And I check, and let me tell you something, I check MMA Junkie every single day. And, it was too soon back then to take a last minute fight, but I had this perfect game plan to get back into UFC. Every time somebody pulled out a fight, I call, you know. I called Joe. I won 3 fights in a row. Nope. I called him 5 fights in a row. Nope. 7 fights in a row. Nope. 8 fights in a row. Nope. 9 fights in a row. Nope. I was like, damn. So
what was his issue with you? What was Joe Silva's issue with you?
He told me 100% that if you don't make it on the Ultimate Fighter, you can't make it in the UFC. So the last time we talked, I called.
You know, you got to keep it as a guy who won. I mean, did only one guy make it from the fighter?
It didn't matter. So I'm winning all these fights. I haven't lost a close fight. I'm just mauling everybody. And I said, everybody told me the same thing. They said, if you want to get in the UFC, you have to beat somebody that was in the UFC. That was how you got in back in the day.
Yeah.
So I told my manager, my coach, and I said, hey, the first person that gets cut from the UFC at 185, I'm going after him. And Nissan Osonek lost to that NCAA wrestler with the big old head, Jake Roshan. And I remember, I think it was in the WEC or UFC, I don't remember. But Nissan Osonek was a UFC veteran. He was tough as hell, good cardio, heavy hands, exciting as hell. I was so, that Nissan Osonek fight, I was terrified. And I I went out there and put him to sleep in like 30 seconds.
Damn. With what was just stand up?
Yeah. You know what it was, right, Chris? That stiff jab.
Stiff jab.
Now, let me backtrack and set this story up. And it was a crazy story. So that was 2019. No, I'm sorry, 2009.
September 12th.
2009. And my career is going good. I'm knocking everybody out. I'm beating everybody. This is after the Ultimate Fighter. I've been to Rampage camps, helped him train for fights. I'm getting better. When I got beat on the Ultimate Fighter, it was like Rocky. I went back to Tulsa, Oklahoma, and I walked into an old school boxing gym. I'm talking about when I walked in, everybody was hitting the bags, looked at me like, just kept working. I'm like, oh, this the real deal. Yeah. I'm talking about old hood, in the hood, pit bulls outside.
That's how it's supposed to be.
Yeah. Straight gutter, bro. I mean, it was crazy. So I hooked up with a team called Ghost Dog Boxing, the guy named Alan Green and my coach, and one of my best friends, Pepe Johnson. And I didn't even wrestle. I straight boxed, man. From the time I left the Ultimate Fighter until I got in the UFC. I mean, I'm still with that guy to this day. I was in an old school boxing gym, and that's where them hands came from. I got a little bit of it at Team Quest, but I boxed every single day. I hit pads, I hit the speed bag, I sparred boxers. I wasn't sparring MMA guys because that's different. I'm getting my ass torn in half by boxers that are fighting. My teammate, he fought Andre Ward, bro. He fought the Super 8 tournament. Yeah. Alan Green. You look Alan Green up. He's a monster until he got killed.
Oh, yeah.
That was my sparring partner. He was a dude broke Mike Tyson's record for knockouts at Golden Gloves. That was my sparring partner. So I learned the hard way, and my boxing was on point. Nobody could hit me. Nobody landed a punch. And I built myself up. I get to March 2019, and it's a crazy weekend of my life. That Friday, we lost the baby that Friday. That was devastating. I'm crying, lost the baby. And I'm like, man, this sucks. I need the money, so I had to fight. That Saturday morning, I had the best training session of my life. You know, it's 7 days from the fight. You on point. I was sharp. My boxing was on point. My coach was like, damn, that was a good workout. I go outside. My mama calls me. She's screaming, he's dead, he's dead. I'm like, who? Mama, stop. My brother got hit by a car on a motorcycle. Killed my brother, killed him instantly. So I lost those two people back to back. Yeah, it sucked. So now the story gets crazier. I lose those back to back. And Rampage Jackson, I call him. He's my boy. I'm like, yo. I'm like, man, what do I do? My brother just died, and his funeral is next week. He died in Georgia, actually, and I was in Oklahoma. And he's like, man, what you want to do? I was like, he said, if you don't want to fight, how much they pay you? Not a lot, right? And I was like, yeah. I said, it's just like $2,000. He's like, I'll give you the $2,000 if you don't want to fight. And I was like, no, nah, man. I said, I want to do this for my brother. In the back of my head, I was like, I might take that money. So
I'll take the $2,000.
My brother never fought. My brother never got to see me fight because he lived out of state. And I said, you know what? I'm going to do this for him. And I went ahead, and the first punch I threw in that fight, I knocked him out cold. I threw that stiff jab, and he went to sleep. And it was an out-of-body experience. I was standing there, and I went, wow, and he went to sleep. And I just bawled. I cried. I didn't cry. My brother died. I kind of – because my mama was crying so hard.
You had to keep it together.
I had to keep it together. So I knocked him out. Now, to make the story even crazier, you guys, mind you, I've been doing comedy and putting on shows for almost 10 years at this point.
Wow.
So everybody looks at me and goes, Gerald, can you do a funeral? So the whole time I'm training for this fight, I booked the church. I got the casket picked out. I got everything done for my brother. I got the food. I met my cousin, did the food. I got the entire funeral set together. I got the obituary. One of my frat brothers made the obituary. I'm picking my brother's obituary like the day before the fight.
Man.
I sent it to the print shop. I go fight this guy. And then that morning, I fought him Saturday, woke up Sunday, drove back to Tulsa, and went to my brother's funeral.
Man.
Wow. Well, to even kind of further his story, which makes it even crazier, It's for Shark Fights, another UFC theater show. It's a co-main title fight. And what happens is you see Oesternik. Gerald is kind of walking to Gerald is watching the way he's walking and times his footwork, kind of like if you were to watch a Jersey Joe Walcott like footwork video. There's a couple of them on YouTube. They're incredible to watch. It was just you found his timing and you just threaded the needle. Like you knew exactly what where
happened,
he was.
Well, two things happened that fight to piggyback off that story. So I took a break. I stopped training. My coach knew it. He knew that was a lot. You know, a baby and a brother and a funeral. I mean, that's in 7 days. So I took a break for like a month or two, and I'm not training or nothing. I get a phone call. It's probably May. And I think I don't remember when it was. And they're like, hey, man, opportunity of a lifetime. I go, what? They said, Nissan Oesternik just got cut from the UFC. He's trying to get back in. He needs to fight someone. Mind you, I'm a tough veteran. So at this point, I'm an Ultimate Fighter veteran. That's what everybody's calling me. You know, I'm signing autographs.
They're using you the same way you're trying to use him.
Exactly. So it's a 5-round title fight. I train my ass off. I call my mom. I'm like, yo, mom, I got this fight in Texas. It's gonna be big. My mama came. My wrestling match stuff. My mama don't miss nothing. I was like, mom, you got to beat her. It's a title fight. And she's like, okay, baby, okay. Let me put in my calendar. When is it? I said, September 12th. She got dead silent on the phone. And I was like, what, mom? She goes, that's your brother's birthday. And I said, why you tell me that? Why you ain't tell me after the fight? I don't know my brother's birthday. You know? So I don't know what happened to me, Chris. I went into a trance. I'm not kidding you. It was the quietest training camp I've ever had in my life. The thought of me losing on my brother's birthday just blew my mind. And it was just this real calm, peaceful camp. I went to the gym. I went home. And that night, we were warming up backstage. And I'm hitting the pads. And my coach was like, oh, you done, bro. You done. He's like, that jab. He said, that's ridiculous. And I remember I hit the pad. It was pow. And it was loud. He said, nope, that's it. He said, that's it. And then he said, you know that walk, Chris. When you standing behind your coach. And, you know, the other guy just got beat. You're like, damn, I'm up next. Shit, I got to go do this for real.
Yeah.
I'm standing behind my coach, and my mind is clear as day, man. And he turns around, he looked back at me, said, it's your brother's birthday? And I did like this. And he goes. And I walked to the cage, and like you said, the first punch I threw, and basically what happened in that fight was I can hear my coach in a thunderstorm. I can hear my coach in the middle of a war. His voice is music to my ears because I can't hear nothing else. And I'm moving, and it's all I hear is my feet, and I hear my coach's voice. And I faked him. We was big on fakes, and he didn't move. He didn't move. And like Mike said,
that's a sign. Yeah.
Oh, I set him up so nasty. I faked, and coach said, ooh, do it again. I knew what that meant. He said, do it, and I faked, and he didn't move, and I went. I mean, that jab was stiff. I put my whole body into it. It's a video on YouTube. I can send you all these links. I step into that jab with all my weight. And I mean, I hit him right in the eyeball. He falls back and we just do this punch we call the bowling ball. I just swung from my hips and I cracked him, man. That extra punch wasn't needed, but I was in the zone. And that was it. I celebrated so hard. I just so much emotion. I had that belt around my waist. It was my brother's birthday. My mom came in the cage. If you watch that video, that's my mom in the cage. And let me tell you something, Chris. I knock him out, right? I'm screaming. I'm like, yeah! Security is like wrestling my mama, right? I'm like, yeah, mom. Man, you can't let mama out.
Have you ever watched the 30 for 30 where Buster Douglas beats Mike Tyson?
But I didn't see the part. His mom did something, right?
No. There's a 30
for 30. His mom passed away.
No, yeah. The 30 for 30, it was like the perfect storm of stuff that happened to him.
Yeah.
You know, he always was right there, but never quite got it. But like, I guess mom died like 30 days before. I mean, it was like the perfect storm of stuff. Yeah. There's no way he was losing that fight. He was in that trance you talked about, you know? So that happens sometimes when the stars line up and like, that's a... people don't understand. It's all about your mindset. If things aren't going right in your mind at that time, you're not going to win. You don't understand. I mean, people don't get that, like how the mental game is. And when things line up, you can be a dangerous fighter again, no matter who you were against. You
it
know
was,
what I mean?
It was exactly what you said. It wasn't about having nothing to lose. I was like, what else worse can happen? My brother's dead, lost the baby. The fight's on his birthday. The pressure was so high that I just didn't affect me. It was like, you know what? I'm just going to go out here and just let loose. I'm just going to get my ass kicked on my brother's birthday. I mean, that's a breath. I still have that belt to this day. It's literally my favorite belt. The Shark Fight belt is beautiful. My battery's about to die, but I do want to get one more story in because it's perfect. Because after that fight, I called Joe Silva again. If you look at my record, I think I was on 9 or 10 fights in a row. No, I was 9 because I was 7-2 when I went on Ultimate Fighter. And then I won 9 fights in a row. I was 16-2 when I got to the UFC. I'll never forget that. I called Joe Silva. I said, Joe Silva, I just knocked him out cold. I said, I knocked out Mason Osinek. He's asleep. First punt, He said, that's good, man. Hey, I need you to get a couple more wins. Get you a couple more wins, and I'll get you in. I said, Mr. Silva, that's 9 wins in a row. Like,
and you're calling him Mr. Silva at this point.
Always. I was seeing
him. Joe, you punk ass.
I was cornering everybody at that time. I would see Joe at the club after fights. Hey, Mr. Silva, how you doing, man? Hey, I'm working hard. I want to get in UFC. I was like that local rapper trying to make it. And I called him, and my heart went into my ass. And I said, Mr. Silva, I just knocked that Nissan Osinek. If anybody pulls out of a fight, I'll take it on 30-second notice. I don't care. He said, nah, man. He said, you got to win some more fights. And I'm like, what? You want me to go 20-0?
I don't get it, man.
So this is how, and I'm going to set you up for the next Zoom meeting because it's a perfect way to set up why my career went so crazy in the UFC. So Joe Silva wasn't having it. Every time somebody pulled out a fight, I call him. Nope.
Damn, man, you look, you didn't block your number, man.
I probably would have, but MMA Junkie announced that Dana White was going to be in studio. This is the December of 2009. I got to find it. I want to find this clip because I want to play it. I'm sure they still have it. MMA Junkie had Dana White in studio. You can ask questions. I mind you guys, you know when you call in, the phone's busy, right? I probably called that dude 400 times. I'm not exaggerating. Me and my friends in a circle were all calling the number at the same time.
Stop it.
So and one friend goes, it's ringing. And I'm like, oh, shit. So I go, hello. They're like, MMA Junkie. I'm like, am I really in? They're like, yeah, man. Like, we queuing you up right now. You about to talk to Dana White. I was like, yeah, you fucking kidding me. They're like, what's your name? I was like, I can't even think of a name. So I was like, so they put me on hold, right? It's like, just introduce yourself when you get in. So my boys is like, bro, this is crazy. All my friends are sitting around me. And I go, and I don't know what made me do it, because I'm a prank call. I've been prank calling people since college. I used to literally in college, I used to have, and mind you, in dorms, you get bit bored. I used to sit in my dorm and prank call people with the whole wrestling team and basketball team standing behind me laughing at my prank phone call, right? Because they were on speakerphone. So I'm pranking Dana live on Junkie. Because who wants to call and say, hey, can you give me the UFC, right?
Yeah.
So MMA Junkie goes, hello, you're live on MMA Junkie with Dana White. Who's speaking? I said, hello there, mate. And then he goes, bro, who is this? I don't remember what my name was. I was like, this is Paul. I'm from England. And they're like, oh, Paul, you calling all the way from England? I said, yes, I'm a big fan of Dana White. And they go, what makes you want to call in? You know, you got a question for Dana White? I said, yeah, Mr. White. Do you remember Gerald Harris? And he goes, yeah, that kid's tough, man. Big slams. And, you know, I heard he's been winning and da-da-da-da. I said, well, hell, you talking to him right now. And the studio shut down. Because I go from this British voice to the hood real quick. And he's going, what? And I was like, it's me, bro. I was playing around on the phone. And he's cracking up. And they're like, yeah, Joe does comedy too, man. And they're hyping me up. I said, Mr. White, I'm on a 9-fight win streak. I just knocked out Nissan Osinek, a guy that you just cut. I knocked him out in 30 seconds. Can I get back into UFC? He said, he always called me kid. He's like, yeah, kid, I got you. He said, when you get off the phone, I'm going to contact you. Got off the phone. the lady had me, you know, when you get off the junkie, you get back to the reception lady. She's like, here's Dana White's number. I put Dana White's number in my phone and I text him, hey, it's Gerald Harris. He goes, he said, I'm on it. He says, I'm on it, something like that. And 3 days later, I was in the UFC.
Did Joe call you, or who called you to tell you you were back in?
This is a setup for our next thing because it's going to get even my career is crazy, bro. Wait till you, it's okay. So Dana's like, I got you. Dana had the power back then. If Dana wanted you in, he's going to get you in.
Oh, yeah.
Joe's him. So I went over Joe's head because
he had to like that. It was sure like that.
Yeah. So Dana's like, I got you. I'm on it. I'm like, cool. So I can't think of the
kid's name. It's barely a little step over his head, though. You know, he's a real short guy.
A southpaw wrestler pulls out of a fight. And Dana White, they sent me a contract, bro. They sent me a contract.
So you didn't have a conversation. Did Joe call you and say you got back in?
I didn't talk to Joe. No, I never talked to
him. Oh, dude, he was salty. He's driving a salt truck.
Oh, yeah.
So 3 days later, or a little bit later, because the fight was in January, a few days later, and this was over Christmas break, I remember, Dana White texts me, says, I'm on it. And I'm like, oh, shit. When he says, this is a random tip, and it's because of somebody pulled out. So I take the fight on 11 days notice. Versus a guy, and his last name started with an M. I can't think of his name.
Anyway. Like your first, your first UFC fight.
Not the guy that I fought. It wasn't the guy that I fought.
Oh, so the guy that pulled out.
I'm filling in.
Mike Massenzio.
So check this out. Mike Massenzio, me versus Mike Massenzio. Mike Massenzio is a wrestler with good striking. I'm like, okay, let's get it. Mike Massenzio pulls out of the fight. So I ain't. It's 11-day notice. This is 5 days into my UFC debut. This is the day before. They used to fly you out for like a whole week back then.
Yeah.
And it was like a day before I flew out. They're like, yo, your opponent pulled out. Well, we got this dude named John Salter. You guys know about John Salter. He's in Bellator now. I'm like, let's get it. They're like, he's a two-time NCAA champion. He's 6-0, and he's a purple belt in jiu-jitsu. I was like, damn. Like, this ain't the dude I can take down and beat down. So, the good thing is I've been in the old school boxing gym for 2 years at this point.
Yep.
This Ultimate Fighter. My hands is heavy. I'm hitting hard. I definitely had a good sprawl. And everybody thought it was going to be a boring fight of me taking down and laying on him. I jabbed that dude. I broke his nose. I was whooping on John Salter. In third round, I finally did a takedown in the third. I didn't take a shot the whole fight. I just boxed him. Bam, bam. He shoots sprawl. Just sprawling, bro. Old school. You know what I'm saying? And that was a game plan. It was a perfect matchup for us, you know, because I knew he couldn't out-wrestle me in a sense because it was MMA, maybe at a tournament. And broke his nose. His nose shifted all over.
His nose was – it's one of the worst nose breaks I've ever seen.
I did old school, Chris. I faked that jab. His nose was broke, and I shot right up on it. It's all on YouTube. I did this fake and his quick double leg, and I took him down the third round just to be safe. You know, I knew I won the first two rounds, and he could hit hard back then, and I just pounded him out. Now, I remember I did get booed because we used to do this thing where, and I was hitting him on the ground, he was blocking all my hits, so I went like this, like I was like kind of tricking, and the crowd was like, boo, like I was showing off. I was like, no, this is a wham. I'm like,
yeah,
I was showing off, you know, it's kind of like a... like a little juke move we would do. But anyway, I ended up finishing him. I pounded him out, and that was my UFC career. Now, mind you, that was the only knockout of the night that night. The only one.
Knockout of the night.
It was a horrible night of fights. It was the only finish of the night, I believe, or only knockout. Kenny Florian fought Takanori Gomi that night, I think. Anyway. And I got the bonus because that was the only knockout of the night.
Yes.
So when I got to that show, I was -$600 in the bank. I don't know how much money I got that night, but I remember going to the bank with my little, it was 6-6 back then. I only made 12 grand in the fight. And the bonus was like 30 grand or whatever it was.
Yeah, geez.
I walk into the bank with this like $42,000 check, and I'm like, bro, you -$600 right now. Like, this is gonna take a while. It took like 10 days to clear. Like, It was like triple checking to make sure that was my check. So
this is from Nigeria.
Yeah, pretty much. You know, I got to send my uncle died and they gave me a settlement. Hey, but look, I don't want my phone to die. I mean, my battery die and I don't have my charge. I'm on my work computer. But look, I love to pick up where we left off.
You tell us when, bro.
Hey, man, we really appreciate it. You're killing it. What's we love today? It. Thank you.
Tuesday, we can do when? Y'all want to do it again? Same time next week? And perfect. Wrap it up?
See you next week, bro.
Yeah, this went real smooth.
I'll tell you this before I go. I got in the UFC, had my first fight, and that's when all hell breaks loose in my career.
Here, before that, just so you know, we are going to backtrack a little bit. You fought on an event where Drew Fickett was the main event. There's got to be a story there. So we'll start there next Tuesday.
Wait. I got to go back real quick. Drew Fickett.
You fought Travis
George. Oh, that was one of those little raggedy cards. Yeah, that was in. We used to call those bum fights. Let me look at my little percentage thing so we can backtrack before I go. I got a few minutes. So check
dude, you fought the praying mantis. You fought the praying mantis, Travis George.
Yeah, but look, that was my first submission win. I remember that fight. I never submitted in my life, and I hit him with a guillotine. But check this out. To get on the bum fights before we pick up next week in my UFC career, in order for me to get in the UFC, I took every fight. Bro, I remember fighting Chris in a casino, and there was a picture of me in my boxing stance, and there's a ring of smoke around my head. So they were smoking in the fighting arena.
Oh, yeah.
I was like inhaling nicotine the whole fight. So the craziest bum fight I ever had. And Daniel Cormier, Sean Bunch, and King Mo used to call me the bum fighting champion because I used to fight on these crazy cards.
Damn.
I'll never forget this. Two things. One story I got to tell you is I remember I fought a guy. I picked him up. I slammed him and I broke the cage. I broke the damn cage.
Was it Jeff Ford?
No, that was the Mitch Witzel, whatever. That was a horrible
one. Mitch Witzel. Okay, so that was C3 fights.
Boring fight I've had in my life. He was terrible. He just kept running. Anyway, so I slam him and I physically break the cage. When I say I broke the cage, it's flopping like this, right? So the fight's over. We keep fighting. They don't care. This is the bum fights, right? We go backstage and I'm the co-main event. The main event's out there.
They got a fight broken cage.
And I'm going to just broke. Hey, just don't fight on that side. Swear to God. Hey, don't fight over there. It's on that side of the cage.
Who's the promoter?
Hey, look, they're moving around and the dude steps on the broken part of the cage and he slips. And the other dude's like, knocks him out cold, bro. I'll never forget it,
dude. I'm not letting that count on my record, dude. That ain't gonna count, you know what I mean?
So that was the promoter?
I ain't gonna say because he's my friend. So, look, the second one, last one before I go. This is all before I got in the UFC. We fought outside, which is a great idea if you have a tent. There was no tent.
If it doesn't rain,
fighting outside. Oh, it rained. Chris, it didn't rain. It stormed. Like, it's a tornado across the street, right? So, I'm the main event, and I'm fighting. And look, everybody's coming backstage with torn ACLs. They slipping and sliding. They're like, bro, they're like, it's raining. It's not like it rained. Like, you're going to walk out in the rain. Like, I'm
no. Like, what? So was it no lightning?
It was everything. Lightning, thunderstorm, tornadoes. I'm not kidding. We're in the middle of nowhere. So it's storming, it's going crazy. I go in there and I pick the guy up. I never forget it. And I slammed him. And it you would have thought I slammed him in a puddle. You know how the guys dance in the movies in the rain and they splash in the puddle. Bro, it was like boosh.
Blinded you. Yeah. Did you lose that fight? You couldn't see from the puddle.
Hey. Hey, I'm hitting him. I'm ground and pound him, and we're sliding across the cage like a slip and slide.
Dude, he held his mouth underwater and tried to drown him. That's how he kept him out, man.
I should have drowned him. I should have pushed him down. I'm hitting him, and the referee jumps in, and he's like sliding in the home base. And it's water. It's raining, bro. I ain't talking about rain. It's physically.
What fight was that?
Is that Oklahoma?
That was in Oklahoma. That was before I got in the UFC.
I don't think people understand Legacy. the weather in that, you know, tornado tunnel or whatever, man.
It's, I knew who that was.
Same, it's wicked.
Same promotion.
It was David Knight.
That's his buddy.
Nope. When David Knight. David Knight. I know David Knight was the – David Knight was March. That was the one my brother passed away. That was a one-punch knockout. Because David Knight had the record for the fastest knockout in Oklahoma, which was like 5 seconds. I remember David Knight.
I don't have – you got to fight that son on your record that I don't have it.
It's on there. Hey, man, I have to look at it.
I had one of those fights where it was – we wouldn't do it in the rain, but it was getting ready to storm out real bad. We had this fight. I was a main event. It was outside. And they said, let's start the card. And it was like 11 fights on the card. And it was really getting ready to rain, like the tornado stuff was coming. So after the sixth fight, they go, you're up. I'm like, I'm the main event. They go, you're up. So I ran out there. I fought the guy, beat him in about 30 seconds. I didn't get out of the ring. 10 seconds later, it pours, lightning, thunder. Fights are canceled. Like, the fights are over, man. People were pissed. But, yeah, we were going to fight the lightning, man. That's a little dangerous.
Tell you which fight it was. Now y'all got me going back.
You got Brandon McDonald. You got Mike Witzel, Jay Ford, Travis Dorge, and David Knight. And then
Brandon McDowell,
short fights.
McDowell fight. Brandon McDowell.
Okay, Brandon multiple slams heavy great. Brandon McDowell.
Yes, that was a fight in the ring. Same right, promotion. Look, every fight I explain to you is in the same promotion, if you look at it. All of those, the same promotion, the crazy fights, the in the ring.
Usually people that aren't afraid of getting sued generally like live in like a house that has wheels on it, so they can't get served like a subpoena.
I move, bro. We move.
Now, here's a funny thing. If I'm looking at my career right now, and those are my boys. They know I clown them all the time. The same organization where I had all those crazy fights. If it wasn't for them, I wouldn't have gotten the UFC. So I'm very thankful. Yeah. But it was funny. Fighting in the rain, fighting in the smoke. Like you see, it's the same promotion. The Mitch Witzel fight was the fight in the smoke. Like it was smoke over my head. My last fight.
Someone photoshopped it. Yeah, it's a fact.
I do have to skip ahead because we'll talk about that the next time we talk. But I'll just say this. My last fight of my career was in the same promotion. In the boat.
That's kind of the way it should be, man. That was cool.
I talked to him. I said, I could end it here, and they were cool about it. So I'll never fight another MMA bout. But it was cool to end it with the people who got me to the UFC. So, but let me go, man. I'm at like 0%. So,
brother, thank you so much, man. Next week,
do it again. Next week. I mean, we were right on our anticipations right there. Expectations, what you want to say. He was fantastically entertaining. He's done a lot in life. Unbelievable to me when I started learning how much success this guy had without really training forever. That's unbelievable to me. I mean, how good could he have been if he'd been training the entire time? Unfortunately, like you said, we didn't get to all of his fights. We just, he's too much of a good interview. So we'll have to do that next time.
So Miguel, I think you agree. Sometimes the fight game finds people and the people don't find the fight game. Like, he was almost pulled into the fight game as an unwilling participant. And it turns out he was really good at it. So what I think we're going to set up with him is he had some really interesting interactions with the UFC, including matchmaking. We got a future panel we're setting up in order to kind of talk about the intricacies involving him because his story is so interesting.
Yeah, I lie. I know him and always fun to meet a guy and, you know, with his background in stand-up comedy and teaching, you know, the guy knows how to handle a room and talk and communicate. And, you know, I think we got a really insightful interview for like a guy doing a drive-by on this sport, really. You know what I mean? I agree with you, Mike. He's a guy, you know, he did all this with 8 kids too. it's hard for me to get my arms. Yeah, I you know, the responsibilities that come with that, and to, you know, keep a smile on his face and do it the way he did and stuff, kind of lighthearted. Hats off to him, man. The guy's living a life that I think I can admire.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, ladies and gentlemen, please like, share, subscribe. If you enjoyed this episode, greatly appreciated. And thank you for joining us.